Alabama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. It's probably time for another basketball podcast. We've got Cecil Hurt in here today. Cecil, how are you?
Great. How are you today?
I'm doing well. It sounds like we're both doing better than the Alabama basketball team.
Well, yes. There's no
no hiding from that fact.
There are no life support devices here in the studio, so
yeah,
that puts us up.
We're recording this on Wednesday evening here in Tuscaloosa, so one day after Alabama was hammered at home by Florida. Since the last time we had a basketball podcast for you guys, Alabama has lost four consecutive games. Lost two home games. It's quite a bit different than it looked a couple of weeks ago.
Ben covered the Kentucky game and started all this, and I have not been able to turn it around from his influence.
Yep, you can blame me. In any event, Alabama is now 8-9 in the conference. I believe just a few minutes ago we were able to at least know that Alabama won't be playing on the first day of the SEC tournament. That's right. That possibility is gone.
I think unless you... LSU took their 10th loss, and Alabama's got the tiebreaker on LSU. Okay. South Carolina already has 10, and Alabama beat them head-to-head. So unless you get a really strange tiebreaker with Georgia somehow involved, Alabama should be in pretty good shape to avoid that. I'd have to sit down and do every tiebreaker, and there's no sense in doing that until Georgia and Texas A&M finish up.
Yeah,
later on I'll do it late tonight or early in the morning.
Yeah, as I mentioned, we're recording this on Wednesday night, so yeah, there's still some SEC basketball being played as we're recording this. Alabama, like I said, 8-9 in the SEC, only one conference game left to play. That's at Texas A&M on Saturday. Alabama beat Texas A&M in its first conference game of the season. Is that right?
That's correct. One? Here, it was while the football team was in New Orleans, I came back to Tuscaloosa from New Orleans and covered that game.
But a lot has happened since
it's been
then.
It's been a long season. That was 2017, a national championship, and some ups and downs. Alabama's got wins over what will end up being the two top seeds. Auburn and Tennessee could be the co-champions, or one or the other could be champion. They've also got losses to the bottom seeds, Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. So if you can explain all that, then have at it.
Yeah.
Inconsistency is the word.
Yeah. I'm just going to ask you the straight-up question here that probably Alabama fans want to know the answer to, and I think they trust you because you've been doing this for a very long time, and you're right more often than not. So is it time to hit the panic button?
Well, I mean, they've certainly taken away any margin for error that they might have had. Today's bracketology, Joe Lunardi has them in as a 10 seed. Jerry Palm has them the first team out. That's going to take care of itself against A&M. If they win, if they go to College Station and win, that's a quality win, a top 30 RPI win on the road. That would put them back in, I would think, in Jerry's calculation. If they lose, they're going to go out in Joe's calculation too, and would at least have to win two games in St. Louis. Would have to win a Thursday night game against a LSU, Georgia, Texas A&M again, somebody like that, and then beat an Auburn or a Tennessee on Friday. So, you know, that's much tougher than what they did have in front of them, which was just splitting a two-game homestand. Just win one of them,
right,
and you're in pretty good shape. You know, now they've got to go and regroup, play better, might play great at Texas A&M and still not win because they might play great too. So they've certainly put themselves on the slippery side of the bubble.
Yeah. The other projection that I saw, however much weight you want to put into certain bracketology projections or whatever websites, teamrankings.com has Alabama at a 37% chance of making the tournament after last night's game.
That's probably right. I think if they won against A&M, it'd go up into the 60s.
Probably.
And if they won again in St. Louis, just one game, if they get two wins, it's back up in the 80s, I think.
So. Yeah. And at that point, if you're in the mid-80s, you're not really worried so much about what you do. You're worried more about if some of the lower
lots
conference
of
teams.
Upsets. Yeah, as it is now, they've got to watch the – not so much. I joke about having to watch the Northeast Conference. Those are going to be one-bid leagues anyway.
Right.
But you watch CUSA because you're going to assume Middle Tennessee would get in regardless. You watch the major conferences to see, you know, what if Colorado wins the Pac-12?
Mm-hmm.
What if Northwestern wins the Big Ten? Not likely, but it would take a bid away from somebody.
Right.
So I don't think they'll watch it to see if Pitt wins the ACC.
Sorry, Kevin Stallings.
The Panthers wrapped up the 0-18 tonight against Notre Dame. So,
as an aside,
I don't know what you do there. Yeah. I really don't.
As an aside, they were down 37-7 at half to Virginia. In the last week at some point. Man, I know that kind of segues pretty well into the next part of our conversation.
Which is Alabama's first half against Florida, right?
Yes, I was going to ask about that. So in the last four games, have there been any common threads that you've seen, issues that have kept popping up?
I thought, and you were there, so you can concur or disagree. I thought they played pretty hard at Kentucky and played decent on-ball defense, just got crushed on the boards.
Yep.
Gave up,
I think, 21 offensive rebounds.
Yeah, and that led to far more points than the margin of victory. So
it was a close game until about the last 3 minutes. They had a chance there at the very end. Yeah, I would say the first factor that led to them losing against Kentucky was the offensive rebounds. The second factor was the fact that they were still close in the last 3 minutes and I think coughed the ball up four or five times.
Right,
they gave away right there.
That's an issue. You know, that's been an issue. Then at Auburn, they came out flat, came out and got behind 15-2, and then got back in it and never got ahead, but got tied and had a chance. And then Auburn had a big run, which they can do. They're playing at home and can shoot the ball well. And Alabama just didn't recover at all from that run and let Auburn push it out to into the 20s. So and then come back and do the same thing at home against Arkansas, get behind 14-2.
Mm-hmm.
Get back in it and then can't finish anything. So, and then against Florida, they were just they other than the first 3 minutes of the game, they were absolutely out of the game at halftime. There was no reason to come back for the second half if you were a fan.
Have you ever seen a stretch like you saw last night against Florida where you go 14 and a half minutes without a field goal? They missed 19 in a row, was it? I mean, not that
from Alabama. No, you know, I've seen some bad halves. They had one of Anthony Grant's teams had a really bad half down at Auburn against a not really good Auburn team a few years ago. But to miss some of the shots there, I've never ever seen a team get 12 offensive rebounds and 0 second chance points in a half.
Jeez.
I mean, that's you're getting the ball 12 times in the paint. And
yeah.
Maybe one or two of them's a long rebound. But essentially, a minimum of 10 of those 12 are in the paint, and you can't finish them. They did get fouled one time on a putback attempt and get, I think, 1 point. Dante Hall scored 1 point at the line. So they got 1 point off 12 offensive rebounds. You should be getting 12 points, you know, easily.
Yeah.
Sexton was 0-7, mostly driving to the basket and just couldn't finish shots that he sometimes can finish at the rim. They didn't get anything, you know, fast break in transition or didn't handle the ball correctly on a couple of fast breaks that they did have. Dante Hall only had 2 shots on the game, so You know, you got guys shooting 75%. Yeah. You got to find some kind of way. So it was a combination of some bad luck and more bad execution, I thought. Missed some makeable shots, but also took some bad shots, got late in the shot clock several times and had to take a, you know, just kind of a heave at the basket. So no, it was uniquely bad.
I don't mean to be flip or to make it sound like I'm making fun of them, but to miss 19 in a row, that's almost historic.
You almost have to try. You know, yeah. You almost have to.
We could almost take county high out there try. Against an SEC team, and you'd think they'd make one out of 19.
You know, yeah. You just shoot from beyond the arc and hope you'd make one out of 19, but they didn't. So. And, you know, credit Florida. They played well. That's not the
Florida's a tournament team.
That's not the point. They're probably a 6 or 7 seed at this point. You know, they've had Arkansas, Missouri, they've done what they've needed to do in the last 2 weeks. You know, Florida got a home win against Auburn, came up here and beat Alabama. That really pushes you up. And, they're not a great inside team by any means. They have some of the same problems that they had when Alabama won in Gainesville. But you know, so not taking anything away from them to say Alabama played terrible, but Alabama played terrible.
Yeah. Florida also had a little bit of a streak earlier this season, I think, where they lost 3 or 4 or 5 in a row in the SEC. There's a lot of teams that are like that. Alabama's just has happened to occur this late in the season.
Right. A&M had a 5-game losing streak early in the year. Kentucky had a 4-game mm-hmm. losing streak. And you know, their fans got a little
Kentucky fans were
agitated,
very agitated, because that was about the time I went to Lexington.
Right. Yeah, they were coming off that 4-game losing streak. But they weren't losing games by halftime. You know, they weren't getting blown out 14-2 and that sort of thing. So I think that's one of the unfortunate things in the homestand is they didn't even give their fans a chance to help them. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a little bit in the Arkansas game, but not really, and not at all in the Florida game. You know, the fans were out of it.
Yeah.
10 minutes in, and
they had that run against Arkansas in the second half where I think they were up 57-56, but then Arkansas just came right back.
Right, had a 9-0 run.
Yeah, and Alabama.
And then Alabama made a run at the end, where you know Colin had a half court. Colin Sexton had a half court shot to tie. You know what are you going to do with that? But and wasn't a good consistent effort through the game in that game either.
You mentioned a couple of times when we've talked this season about offensive rebounds being kind of a sticking point, or Alabama's kind of presence inside being something that this team doesn't quite have. It's obviously, in college basketball, you can't go and pick a guy up or trade for a guy. How much of a difference do you think it would make for this team if you had a guy like Bola or Jimmy Taylor?
It would make some. You wouldn't give up 20 offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm.
Which might mean that you're not on a 4-game losing streak.
Without fouling out or fouling them out or you know somebody getting banged around. So it would help. You have the roster that you have. But you also just have to compete. Daniel Giddens, Alex Reese, they're big enough, you know, they're capable of rebounding. You just have to get a body on a body and get in there and not be denied, you know. That was the one thing. Now, I will say they really did out-rebound Florida pretty significantly, partly because they had so many missed shots that could be offensive rebounded, but they did do that. They just didn't convert them into points or into fast breaks.
Going back to something that you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, Alabama has wins over the top two teams in the SEC. That's Auburn and Tennessee, and has losses to the bottom two teams in the SEC. That's Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. If you were to go and win those two games against Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, then all of a sudden you're 10-7. You're there bunched up.
Right, you're worried about momentum, but you're not worried about getting in the tournament.
You're bunched up with Florida and Arkansas, right. You know, you would have lost the tiebreakers to those teams, but you'd still be in the mix to play as a bye in the SEC tournament.
Yeah.
Should those two losses maybe have raised bigger red flags earlier this season?
I think, you know, Vanderbilt was so early. It was when we were coming back from New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I think that Alabama fans have an expectation that they're never going to play well at Vanderbilt. They ended up losing by 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
Because they got off to a terrible slow start, came back at the end, really turned Vandy over with the press, and ended up 1 point short, whether they missed an out-of-bounds call on Vanderbilt in the last 10 seconds. We can debate that. But they let Vandy stay close enough to make some shots at the end and couldn't win. So I guess Vandy's going to end up with 5 wins on their home court. I mean,
that's where they are now. They and Ole Miss both have 5 wins. So there's no one in the conference who's going to be 3-15 or something.
No, there's not a team like that. You know, Ole Miss immediately fell apart after Alabama left.
Mm-hmm.
Until they turned around and went up and beat Missouri the other day, which was a shock. So they're at least capable teams. It's not like we were joking about Pitt. They're not like Pitt. But
Pitt is incapable.
But if you're going to be a top four team, you've got to do what Auburn's done, what Kentucky's done, and go in those places and win, you know, and then get the – you need to – you know, they did get one at LSU. You need to get LSU Ole Miss and Vanderbilt on the road. That gives you 3 road wins. Then if you just get one more, Florida, and maybe steal another one, then you're 5-4 on the road, and you should be in great shape. Mm-hmm. Now you shouldn't be 6-3 at home, particularly when you beat Auburn and Tennessee, but that's where they are. And, again, it's just an inconsistency for a variety of reasons, some of the ones that Avery Johnson lists are valid. You know, experience is a valid concern, but we are at the 30th game of the year also. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of freshmen making a lot of plays in the SEC, whether it's Tremont Waters or Kevin Knox or several others who are having productive freshman years without making a tremendous amount of mistakes.
I'm going to ask you one of the tough questions now. Mm-hmm. There is a fair amount of consternation about Avery Johnson, at least among some fans.
Sure.
What would it mean if he were to miss the tournament this season? Which, that's not decided, but that it's a possibility at this point.
Well, first, you know, people say, well, Greg Byrne, he's shown that he's, you know, he doesn't mind changing coaches, but to compare this situation with last year's baseball situation is unfair. There were so many extenuating circumstances.
I'd agree.
With baseball, that's not a fair comparison. Mm-hmm. No matter how bad the baseball team's record was, Greg Goff wasn't fired because of the baseball team's record.
Correct.
Now, Avery is in year 3 and not in year 1, but I don't think that they would be any closer to actually making a change in year 3. I think that what would happen if they missed the tournament, I think people would be skeptical going into next year, and he would have to show them something. They'll be picked probably. Let's say they lose to A&M, don't make the tournament. Colin Sexton goes pro. They won't be picked very highly next year.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually could be better. You know, they actually, given some things, given some recruits playing well, given Tevin Mack coming in as a transfer, given Dante Hall continuing to improve, their record could be better next year.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to wait and see on that. But they're just not going to be able to generate, unless they make this NCAA tournament and win a game or two. It's going to be difficult for him to go into next year with very much enthusiasm from the fan base, I think.
One thing you might also want to consider on the other side of the Greg Byrne situation is that it may be the case that an AD doesn't want to have the reputation of being the guy who came in and shook everything up immediately and got rid of a couple coaches. I don't know if that will end up playing into his decision-making or not, but you could make the argument either way, if you're going to make the argument that just because he let go of the baseball coach after 1 year that he'd be willing to let go of the basketball coach.
Yeah, again, unless there were many circumstances off the field or off the court, I just don't think that that's That's just really an apples and oranges situation. So I think he wants to win. I think he realizes that basketball is an important sport. It was an important sport at Arizona, where he was the AD before. You don't want to be that school that's good at football and bad at other things. Good at football and indoor track. Shout out to indoor track for the SEC championship.
First one since the 70s?
Since the 70s,
right?
Yeah. Which is not a reflection that they've been absolutely terrible for 45 years. For one thing, over the last 25 years, it's a reflection that you let Arkansas into your league.
Yeah.
You know, that dents your track championships right there.
Yeah. Arkansas is one of the most dominant track programs in the country if you don't follow collegiate track.
So, but that's a really big accomplishment for them. But back to the point, you don't want to just be a football school and not want to be good in everything else. You know, football generates so much revenue and so much national attention that it should elevate everything else. And I think Greg Byrne believes that.
So looking forward to the last game of the regular season on Saturday, that's at Texas A&M. How does Alabama match up against Texas A&M? How have things kind of changed since that first SEC game?
Again, on the backboards, they don't match up well. They've got Williams and Davis, who are great rebounders, great offensive rebounders. You've got to really do a good job against them. A&M is inconsistent at its guards. Hogue can shoot pretty well, but you know, they've had injuries this year. They've had suspensions. They've had dismissals. So they've had some games where they play really well with those front court guys really dominating people, and then they've had some games where you wonder how they lost that game. LSU swept them, beat them twice. So there are some things that Alabama can exploit in the A&M backcourt, and if they can be physical and not just get destroyed on the boards, you know, A&M is going to get some. I mean, mm-hmm. You've got Tyler Davis and Robert Williams, you're going to get some. But, you know, don't let them get so much that they're scoring 75 or 80 and you can't score enough to win. You got to keep that game in the 60s, 64, 65, and give yourself a chance.
That's about where it was the first time around, right?
Yeah.
And it was a close game the first time around, too, right?
It was. A&M was – they were missing – two starters. Hogue, you know, their best three-point shooter was out. They didn't shoot the ball very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't dominate. They out-rebounded Alabama, but they didn't dominate on the boards. So that's what Alabama's got to do again.
So kind of as a parting note here as we start to wrap this up, is it fair to say the prognosis for Alabama basketball is win two more games, preferably your next two games, and you feel pretty good about your tournament chances?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think two would definitely mm-hmm. do it.
Win one?
One, if it's A&M, you know, A&M on the road is much more valuable than, say you were in an 8-9 game against Georgia on a neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, A&M's through everything. They're still a top 30 RPI team. So they're a quadrant A win if you beat them on the road. So that would be a pretty valuable win, almost to the point where I would say that one could put you in regardless of what happened in St. Louis. Would feel better if you got a win in St. Louis too. I think if you get both of those, then you're playing on Friday again against an Auburn or a Tennessee, which is that's where they're going to fall in the pairings. And if you do that coming off of two wins, then you're fine. You know, that loss, if you take a loss, doesn't hurt you, and if you win that one, then you've really, you know, helped your seeding a little bit. So
mm-hmm.
so that's a best case scenario. And worst case scenario is if you lose Saturday, you're really looking at a minimum of two wins to get yourself back even into the conversation. And one of those wins being Auburn or Tennessee.
Yeah. Avery Johnson said last night after the game that he was going to go back, take a look at the film, and see what he could fix with the basketball team. Do you think there's something that can be fixed at this point, or something that they can identify and patch up?
Well, you know, there are several things. I would say to keep it short, since we're kind of at the end of the podcast, they just need to fundamentally find – the simple things that they can do. You know, you, if you go 14 minutes without a basket, there's got to be a play you can run that's going to get a good shooter open for a good shot. You know, whether that's Dante Hall at the basket, whether that's John Petty getting a good square look at a three, there's got to be something you can do. And I don't know, and I'm sure that they've got that in the playbook, but I don't know that that they're doing a very good job of either conveying that to the players or having the players on the floor to execute what you do. And they're, you know, they're still shuffling line. They got a new starting lineup against Arkansas, and that's game 30. You know, you're in the 30th game, and you're shuffling the lineup, you're shuffling the substitution pattern. Didn't help them that Herb got hurt. They weren't going to win the game, Herb or no Herb, with the way they played. But Herb Jones fell, hit his head, and we have not heard what his status is. He was going to be evaluated today, so we'll find out tomorrow, you know, whether he'll be able to play. They never used, as far as I can tell, neither football or basketball actually used the phrase concussion protocol, but that's what it is. They said head injury, and that's what it is. Took a really hard fall. You could hear it. You know, the head hit the wood of the basketball floor, and so you know, they took him back to the locker room. He didn't come back for the second half, so you just don't know.
Yeah. So you're saying go find the basketball equivalent of running the power O or a dive up in the A gap,
yeah,
or a screen play to start some kind of rhythm.
Something that your guys are confident in, you know. And I'm not saying that you're automatically going to score. You know, basketball is basketball. Teams defend you. But they don't look like they have any confidence in anything consistently working. Then they get in a situation, well, Colin, and Colin's competitive. I truly don't think it's a situation where they've quit. People throw that around. Well, they quit. They got no heart.
I would agree with you. I don't think that's the case.
I don't think that's the case, but I don't think they're confident in what they're doing. Then Colin feels like, well, you know, we got to do something. Takes it on himself to score. Then the other guys wonder what their role is and
back off a little bit,
you know. And that's not Colin's fault. He's just trying to find a way to get the ball in the basket and win. But they just don't have anything that's to use, again, the football cliche, that's a bread and butter for them. You know, I think Kentucky, when they were having that four-game losing streak, I think Calipari went back and said, looked at his roster and said, all right, you know, the one thing we can do is we've got plenty of big bodies and we can crash the glass every time the ball goes up, you know, and feel good about that, feel confident. You know, he talked about his locker room, the guys doubt and not listening to him, and then they figured something out and they've been playing well. So, you know, that's where Alabama is. It's just a terrible time of year to be there. So we'll see how they do in College Station.
I think that's a good place to leave it. Thank you for coming in, Cecil. We appreciate it.
Sure, glad to do it.
Yeah. We'll have another basketball podcast at some point for you guys in the coming weeks, whether that's an NCAA bracket breakdown, whether that's a postseason podcast looking back at the season that was, depending on how it shakes out from here. In any event, thank you for listening, you guys. If you can give us a like on iTunes or a rating or a review, we appreciate that. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is the Bama Beat.